Hi, I'm Sanjay, and I'm a serial entrepreneur for the kicks, and I also invest in startups.
And I'm Shannon, a recent college grad working on building my first company.
And this is Startup Days,
the show where we take a behind-the-lens look at starting and growing a company from the perspective of founders and investors.
Welcome to another episode of Startup Days, and today I've got Jordy Gamson on from The Icebox Cool Stuff. Welcome to the show, Jordy.
Thank you.
How's it going?
Everything's good.
So first question right off the gate I've got is, why is your company named The Icebox Cool Stuff? That's a long name, isn't it?
It is. Well, we go by The Icebox, or even just Icebox. We were named by a customer, actually, back when we first started as, you know, there's lots of things to get in order to start a company. And
right.
As we were getting our personnel and our structure and everything, we kept putting the name off, thinking that it would just magically come one day until it finally came to the day where it had to come, because we had to go open a bank account and,
right.
and do that. So we were a spinoff of another company called Gagware, and it was a Friday, and Life is Good, the clothing brand, you may be familiar with it.
Okay,
out of
yeah.
Boston. So the Life is Good founders, the two brothers, were at our facility in Norcross, which this was Gagware's facility, and they were getting a tour of the facility. I was in a conference room with a couple other people, and we had a whiteboard, and we were trying to come up with a name, and we were like forcing it, trying, because we knew we had to, time was limited.
Right.
So both of these guys stick their head in the conference room, like, hey, what's going on in here? Oh, we're doing a spinoff company. And the first thing they asked was, oh, what's it called? And we said, well, that's what we're working on. And they said, well, we're doing a spinoff company too. And we said, what's yours called? And they said, well, we can't tell you just yet, because it's still being papered up and trademarked and all that, but
right.
we'll give you the name that we almost chose if you want it. And we said, what's the name? And they said, Icebox. So we wrote it down, thinking like, okay, we don't sell ice, we don't sell boxes, it doesn't really pertain. And then we were mentally exhausted, so we told everybody in the room, look, everybody go home, tell their friends, family, whatever, all these names, and on Monday we're going to call the people and ask which ones they remember and which ones they liked, and everybody remembered Icebox.
Okay.
So that's how we got our name.
So then you added on the cool stuff to make sure
that
it was descriptive.
Well, what happens is, we're not the only Icebox, just like Delta, there's Delta Faucets, Delta Airlines,
right.
Delta Apparel. There. So to make it legal, we became The Icebox Cool Stuff LLC, but we go by our nickname, The Icebox.
Yeah, and it's worked out well, because you've got a mascot, right? The penguin.
We do.
Is that
yes.
like your official mascot?
That's our official mascot, Ping.
Ping.
Ping the penguin. Yep.
So that's kind of like Proto here at Prototype Prime. We really couldn't come up with a good name for the mascot once we got him, so we just used Proto.
They should hang out.
There you go.
Yeah.
Do you have a full costume?
We
for
do.
You do?
Yes.
I'm jealous. We don't have one at Proto yet.
We can help with that.
Oh, there you go. So what is it that Icebox does, in case our listeners don't know?
So we are a full one-stop shop branding company, where we do promotional products, uniforms, apparel for companies that are either, it could be a one location, or it could be a national massive Fortune 50 company. Everything from apparel, promotional items. We do a lot of quick service restaurant chains, uniforms. So you can go into a lot of the, you know, your local corner burrito place or pretzel place or whatever, and there's a good chance we do the uniform.
Yeah. So let's step back and talk about where you're from and how you kind of got to where you are now. So born and raised where?
Born and raised Orlando, Florida.
Orlando. Okay.
Yep. And was a product of an entrepreneurial family. My father and grandfather and uncles, they were all in business. They were actually all in the same industry, the scrap metal industry, the recycling industry.
Okay.
Always thought that's what I was going to do when I grew up. Moved from Orlando to Gainesville, Florida to go to the University of Florida.
Yep.
Took school semi-seriously, knowing that I was the one of the few lucky ones that was going to have a job when I graduated, until...
You had a company to inherit, basically, right?
That's the way I saw it.
Yeah.
Until one day my dad calls and said, hey, there's a company that's interested in buying the business. I've already spoken to your brothers, just wanted to make sure that you also have no interest. And I was the only one that had interest. And I was like, you know what? I don't want to be the one that holds back. This is his dream.
Right.
You know, so I told him do what he wanted to do. And so what that did is it allowed me to leave Orlando. I really, not that it's not a great place to raise a family, but it's not necessarily a great place to go find a family. Or create one. So I moved to Atlanta, bigger city, had a few friends from school, and I moved here, and lo and behold, I got a job with a scrap metal company because I ran out of money and I ran out of ideas.
Yeah.
So did that for 4 years, and then I saw an opportunity to actually, I kept going on these job sites, and there was a need for a qualified, more sophisticated, fully insured mobile dismantling entity to go and get the scrap from remote locations and bring it back to the processing yards.
Okay.
So I set up a company in 1994 to do that. And I did that until 2001.
Okay.
Sold that company across the hall.
Did you end up raising any money for that?
No,
or that was
no,
all
that
bootstrapped,
was, that
self-funded?
Bootstrapped. I only know bootstrap.
Okay.
So everything I've ever done is from the strap of a boot.
Okay.
So across the hall was a guy that I went to school with and his brother, who the guy from across the hall started selling T-shirts out of his dorm room at University of Florida. So he and I had known each other for a long time. And when I was getting out of the scrap business, I said to these guys, Scott and Greg Alterman, I said, look, keep your ears and eyes open. I'm going to want to do something. I'm in my mid-20s, and I need to do something. So, listen, and it doesn't have to be scrap-related. As a matter of fact, I'd prefer if it wasn't scrap-related. So, so they said, okay,
enough homage to the family business.
It was time to move on.
Yeah.
So they said, okay, well, we'll keep our eyes and ears open. And then, lo and behold, they called me a week or two later, and they said, you know what, we've been thinking about it, and we'd like to do something with you. So, we started the Icebox together.
Okay.
And we were initially a spinoff. They had about 100 customers, very small customers, that the production runs were limited. It was high touch, low volume type accounts, high aggravation in some cases.
Right.
And we were going to, but it was only apparel. And we were going to add promotional items as well and go use that as our initial customer base. And so that's how we started with those. It started out thinking that it was going to be 100 customers and ended up being maybe more like 50. And of those 50, the spin was probably about a quarter of what we had originally thought. And then a couple months later, we started in 2001. We started in June of 2001. And, of course, September 11th
You
happens.
Timed it so perfectly.
We ended up, even though it was a horrific time in our country's history and all that, it actually was a very good time to start a business because it was – you had to develop really good habits from the very beginning or there was too much headwind.
Yeah.
If not, so we...
So even if you wanted funding at that point, you were not going to get it post 9/11.
There was really nothing to fund.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't really have much. Our funding was to make it to the next payroll.
Yeah.
So that's really where we started. And because we knew that we brought in an artist because we needed an artist. We brought in a bookkeeper because we thought we needed a bookkeeper. We probably didn't at the time. And then everybody else was sales.
Was there not
myself.
Enough money to keep track of?
There wasn't anything to count. Yeah, there wasn't any, only bills to count. So anyhow, but we stayed, true, and we kept getting accounts, keeping accounts and winning new business, keeping accounts and winning new business. And then, flash forward, if you do that enough times, your income will start to exceed your expense.
Yeah.
And so we ended up actually doing okay. We weren't a big business year one by a long shot, but here we are 17 years later and we have, I don't worry about getting to the next payroll anymore.
Right. So when you started, it was three of you co-founding the business?
So there was four of us.
Four of you.
There was four of us initially. In 2006, Scott Alterman and myself bought the other two guys out. So now it's just the two of us. And it's been that way since from that point forward.
And the other two, were they just tired of the business?
There was another company called Alternative Apparel.
Okay.
That's a blank apparel company. So we decided that we were going to put our equity and our energy where we worked every day. So the other two guys went and took Alternative, and they focused on that every day. And Scotty and I focused on the Icebox every day.
Okay.
And then we moved into a new facility to us. It was actually a really old building in Inman Park on the Beltline. Although the Beltline was not the Beltline. That's when it was still abandoned railroad tracks back then in 2007. And then we expanded across the street in 2013 with another building. And then In 2017, we expanded again in a much larger building out by Porsche's headquarters by the airport.
Right.
So that's our most recent expansion.
And that's where you do production now?
We do warehousing, fulfillment, kitting, the pick, pack, and ship it, and screen printing.
Okay. And for the folks that have seen your building on the Beltline, they probably know the mural that's right there on the side. Yep. What's the story behind that mural?
So that's an interesting story. So that was actually a customer that came to us. They were a very active customer, a well-funded startup.
Who no longer exists. Well-known Atlanta company.
And so they asked if they could come and just do a social media blitz and paint a mural on the back of the building. And I said, sure, under two circumstances, stipulations. One is it's only going to be a short period of time, and two is we're going to paint over it when you're done. And so that's what they did, and then they put it up, and then we just kind of liked it, so we left it.
Yeah.
And that was, I don't know how many years now, but it's at least 5 or 6, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Did this startup do any other murals, or was this the only one?
I think they did some in their own office, and the startup was Yik Yak.
Yeah.
So
I didn't know if we were allowed to say who it was, but anybody that sees the mural knows that it's Yik Yak.
I think it still says Yik Yak on the mural. There's so many people that do take photos and selfies in front of it that, you know, I figured it's got good mojo, at least for us it has, so we're going to leave it like it is.
And it says somewhere on there, right? Icebox Cool Stuff, or does it not?
Well, the Icebox Cool Stuff was the only thing that was there. That was one of the, I'm sorry, there were 3 stipulations. The other one was they had to paint around what was already there, which we had our penguin back there saying Icebox Cool Stuff.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I was on Croc Street just the other day, and I was driving down, and I saw there's a mural from Tommy Bronx on that street too, and I saw a bunch of people, and they were clearly tourists stopping at that mural and taking pictures of themselves, in theory, I guess, to post on Instagram. So you've probably seen a lot of pictures of your building online.
Yeah, lots.
Yeah. Do people like ever come to you because they've seen these kinds of posts, or is it just more awareness than anything else?
I think people do actually come into the building and they want to know what, I mean, it's not really that type of building where we're not a retail organization, but,
right.
But no, people know the building from, and it's just becoming more and more well known with, as the development continues.
Yeah. So that area has continued to grow, and you guys have been there for a long time. Is there anything that you're seeing that you like, you don't like, that's happening on the Beltline? Well, you've got this perspective of being there from before really the development.
I mean, knowing from where we've come from, there's very little not to like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a vibrant part of town. There's a lot of you know, just energy. Of course, it brings more traffic. That's okay. I'd rather have the energy and the people than worry about the traffic. Although there's, you know, most of the traffic is bike traffic and stuff. The only thing that I would say is a negative is there's more people down there, and people aren't aware that if they leave valuables in their car exposed, it's still, you know, there's still an element, or it's actually probably an element that comes in from outside that area, and they're looking to smash and grab. And that's not uncommon in that area for smash and grabs to steal a backpack or a computer case or something like that. That happens.
Especially probably more so now, because there are folks that have.
Right, because before there was no one that had it. You know, there were no computers.
There's nothing to grab.
Exactly, yeah.
What about that area? Has it helped you in terms of getting employees and retaining employees? Is that a benefit for y'all?
Yes, because a lot of our employees either walk to work, ride their bikes to work. They live in the area. They want to live in the area.
Yeah.
So attracting people has been, we've been very lucky with a lot of people wanting to come work for the company. And I think a lot of it does have to do with our physical location.
Yeah. So in terms of that new building that you bought that's near Porsche, was that a challenge at all? Because now people, you know, that were used to coming to where you are right now, now have to drive, because I'm assuming they can't walk to where
they're not going
to
walk.
Yeah,
no,
it's
they're not
going
to
walk.
Correct. And that's so surprisingly, we when we looked at locations, we wanted to be within a 15-minute drive. So it is a 15-minute drive. Everything's dependent on traffic. So, you know, you can
as everything is in Atlanta,
you can drive to your next door neighbor, and it could take you a nanosecond. Depending on traffic, it could take you an hour and a half.
Right.
You know, so it's usually 15 minutes. We wanted to be close to a major customer of ours, Delta Airlines, which is obviously by the airport. We wanted to be, but we also learned through our due diligence that there was a fair amount of people, especially our production people, that were coming from the south side of town.
Okay.
So it's actually closer for a lot of the people to come to work every day going to our, we call it Tradeport because it's in Tradeport Industrial Park.
Okay.
So, no, that also has not been an issue attracting great people.
Okay, so. That's great. So in terms of, so you've been doing this now, this is company number two. You've been doing this for 17 years.
17 years, yeah.
Yeah. You're still excited about the business. What is it that keeps you going about this? Because that's a long run for an entrepreneur to do a company.
I mean, it's all the things, all the things that you've heard everybody say. First off, we have a great team and it's fun. I love going to work every day.
And how many people are you guys now?
We're just under 110.
Okay.
So maybe 108. It's at a point where it changes, you know, here and there, and I don't keep up with it like I once did.
Yeah.
But it's right around there.
Do you know most everybody's name, even at 108, 110?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I want to make it my point too, so I do.
Okay.
What was the question? Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
What keeps you excited?
Oh, thank you. I distracted you too.
Yeah, that's so. Okay. What excites you?
You know, okay, so any expansion, growth, new customers, just anything that's involved, that kind of, you know, as an entrepreneur, I like putting the new warehouse together. That was something that I felt like that was a next big step for us. We needed it. It was going to transform the type of customer we were going to be able to attract. It was going to allow us to do things ourselves that we previously had to outsource.
Yeah.
And it was fun to kind of like have the vision. And then, you know, many months later, not that many, like 8 or 9 months later, now every time I make that turn and pull up to our building and everything from, and we're a branding company. So,
right.
You know, it's us when you pull up, when you make the turn to get, we're in a cul-de-sac. You know, it's us. It's very obviously us, the way it's branded, the way the exterior is branded, as soon as you walk in the door, you know, it's us. And so it's fun to have something that you think about in your mind and then actually have it come in to reality.
Yeah.
Is a lot. I get a lot of energy from that. I also get a lot of energy watching and helping people grow that start with us. We're bringing in a lot of employees and it's fun to watch them come in and then watch them succeed and watch them learn lessons, which is usually through a little bit of struggle, but then they get smarter. And so that's a lot of fun for me too. It's just, you know, being part of that.
And how hands-on were you on both parts, the building, the new build out, and as well as employees? Like how involved are you all in their development path?
So I'm involved. So we are very
on both on the building. You were super involved as well.
Definitely involved on the building. I mean, I was literally myself driving down to the county to get permits and things like that because I knew what I wanted, and it was just easier for me to just do it myself. Although we've done previous projects where I've hired that out, and now that we're bigger, you can argue that it was a even worse use of my time. But I just knew how to do it, and I did it. We have this saying around the office, it's get stuff done ninja. So that's who we like to hire, is people that just know how to get stuff done, not held up at the first little stumbling block. And so I just knew how to do it, and I did it, and I took care of it in a day. And
it sounds like you need to dress up Ping to be a ninja as well.
And maybe. We should probably consider that.
Hand those out when people do ninja stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
I need to jump on that.
there's a free idea for you here right on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So in terms of doing this now, you've been doing it for this long, like there's probably been struggles along the way. Like what's been the worst? And was there any point in time where you were like, man, I'm done. I want to leave this thing.
Never said I'm done.
Yeah.
No.
What kept you going when those times got really tough?
You know, well, in 2008, when the big recession hit, we heard it. We heard rumblings of, you know, competitors and people that supplied us, and everybody was talking about how their business had been, you know, deeply affected. And we were like, you know, maybe we're exempt, maybe we're lucky, maybe who knows, you know,
right?
And then until we got looking at our September, we closed out September of 2008. And we were like, there was a hickey. There was a financial hickey that we created. and we're like, wow, that kind of snuck up on us. I guess we're not exempt. And we weren't cocky to think we were going to be. We were just kind of hopeful, and we were young and even more naive than we are now. So we didn't want to repeat in October. So we had a plan in mind, and we executed the plan. It was a Friday, and we literally executed it. It was five or six major things that were unpleasant in every way, including our executive team took pay cuts.
Yeah.
We let eight or nine people go, all one after the next. So we just figured if we're going to do it, let's just do it while we can still afford to pay a little severance and kind of cut expense there. We asked every other employee to take a one-day paid-off furlough day that they would not get an unpaid day off per month. Some of them loved it. Some of them didn't.
Did you lose any people because of that?
No.
No.
We didn't. Okay. As a matter of fact, we immediately, the very next month, we made more money than we had in even a traditional month pre-recession, and we were a healthier company. We didn't need what we got rid of, and we realized that.
Yeah.
So we were fortunate, and we were actually able to navigate from 2008 to 2013, or however long that period lasted. We grew significantly. There was a competitor of ours that we were able to acquire that almost collapsed at our feet. It started off as a real negotiation, and as the negotiations dragged out, we realized that they were in trouble, and we were able to take advantage of that situation, that opportunity. We grew by a lot of customers, so it actually was a very prosperous time for the company. Most of the dollars are reinvested back in because we knew we were hiring more people and we expanded our operation. And so, but it was looking back at it, unfun to have to make those decisions that affected people. But it was the right thing to do for the business.
And those often tend to be the times where those great companies really make the leap, right? When economic issues are kind of hitting, and that's why you guys were able to buy this competitor. Was that local? The competitor?
Local competitor. Yep.
Okay, so you were able to kind of combine it. Any thoughts about moving beyond Atlanta and having facilities elsewhere?
Yeah, so we do talk about that. Although we love Atlanta. There's a lot of it's a big growing city, and there's so much more we can do here.
And your customers aren't just here in Atlanta.
No, they're not just here. You've got them everywhere, right? They're not just here, and we have Hartsfield. So, yeah. And I don't mean as a customer. They're a customer also, but I mean as a – Hartsfield is a magic carpet. I mean, we can get to a lot of places in an hour, 2 hours. So to go and invest in real estate and infrastructure and remote employees and stuff, when we can be some in a customer's office in an hour and a half door-to-door, it's pretty compelling.
Right. How much time do you think about – kind of culture and organization and things like that?
It's a constant part of how we operate.
And is it you mainly, or is it other people on the team as well?
We have an executive team, and culture is a big part of it. Culture is, it evolves as the company, as the company's needs change. And so we're in the process now of scale. I had always heard the term, never really knew exactly what it meant. I thought it meant like leverage or whatever.
Right.
You can leverage one to do many. Scale is a very easy thing to say. It's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
It changes it culturally. It challenges the culture in some ways, because people get very comfortable and scale scale basically means change and adapt, and so you can become better. And that's sometimes hard for some people.
Yeah. So, and so when you're talking about scale, what are you talking about? Are you talking about in terms of number of people or a number amount of revenue or customers? What's your scale that you're thinking about?
Everything. So we have a revenue target that we've set for ourselves that we'd like to achieve in a few years.
Yep.
And to support that, we promoted a senior, our chief operating officer, to now president. We brought in a VP of sales and marketing. We've made a more of a chain of command for accountability. And then we're supporting it. My business partner and I are we really don't direct manage anyone other than the president now. So everybody on his executive team reports up to him. And so there's just more span of control. We're able to, it's not the days of old where my business partner and I were involved in every little decision. I mean, there's lots of things that happen around the company that we don't know about. We may not know about unless somebody decides to tell us or we ask about.
Yeah.
So very unlike the days of old where we were involved in every little meeting and conversation.
And what happens when there is a decision that you learn like that that you don't agree with?
We empower the people. We trust them. Yeah. Bringing in the very best people we can afford, or even if we can't afford them, we still want them. And because they're that valuable to a company.
Right. So, parting note for our listeners, what's the one piece of advice you would give to another founder, either a first-time founder or a repeat founder? Like, what's the one thing that you wish you knew or wish somebody had told you or you'd like to tell somebody else?
It probably goes back to, so I've had several other businesses. If you bring in the very best people, and when you're starting a company, you know, usually money is not your most abundant resource. It's, or whether you're using your own money or you're bringing in outside money. But if you bring in the very best people, everything happens faster. It's more fun. It's the foundation is more stable. It is all about getting the right people. And you can't pay too much for them.
Yeah.
You can pay too much for someone that you're getting at a deal.
So as a follow-up to that, I know it said it was the last thing, but how do you find those good people? How do you know that when you see one that is a good person?
I don't have that answer. It's a little, people can give great interview and terrible job.
Yeah.
So it is, you lean on people you trust. If you if you're checking them out, you lean on your gut a little bit. Although I've had people that have blown me away in interviews, and then they get in the job, and you don't know until they're actually doing it. So I guess the thing is you have to be ready to pull the ripcord if you know it's not the right person, and that way, because you don't know, you don't
right.
have the crystal ball, but you do know once you do know, you can make a decision. So
your advice is don't wait. Like once you know,
don't wait.
Don't let it linger.
Don't let it linger, because it also poisons the other good people that are there.
Right.
So they see somebody and they don't understand, and why are we keeping this person? And
yeah.
So it happens in every organization. We're not exempt from that ourselves. But,
yeah.
But I have learned that the sooner you react, I was listening to a podcast, and Jack Welch, I heard him speak, and he said that be honest with your people, and it's cruel to keep people that aren't the right people. And he said, and severance is probably the best thing you can do for your company and that person. Let them go be happy somewhere else, and let it not cause the company to suffer.
It's funny. I was talking to another founder that was having this kind of an issue, and they had somebody and went like, well, I'm going to keep trying and working on it, and maybe it'll get better. And it was those magic words for me. And I said, has it ever gotten better? Like when you know that somebody's not a right fit, has there ever been a time where you've been able to actually convert that? And I've never been able to do that, and maybe that's a failing on me. I don't know if you've ever been able to convert.
Not in the same role that they've been failing in. There have been situations where people haven't worked out in one role, and then we will try them in a different role, and we realize, okay, they did deserve a seat on the bus. They were just
in the wrong seat.
Yeah. So that's happened, but sometimes that's also putting off the inevitable, because it's easier to do that than it is just to
have the hard conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But people deserve it.
It sounds like you were a fan of the book Good to Great, Jim Collins.
Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah. Same here. Yeah. That's a great book. Listeners, if you haven't read that book, highly recommend it. Well, with that, Jordy, thanks a lot for being on the podcast. We definitely appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.